Molly Beck is the exceptional political reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal, and she is kind enough to join us today to talk about a few issues going on in Wisconsin. And Molly, I have to start off with something you put up on Twitter. Today marked the 2-year anniversary of you getting pepper sprayed at a Donald Trump rally in Janesville. What?
Yes. That did happen. That is a true fact.
I mean, you look thuggish. I'm going to be honest with you. How in God's green earth did you get pepper sprayed?
The pepper spray was not meant for me. I should have clarified that. But I was covering one of the rallies Donald Trump had here ahead of the state presidential primary. And there was a big rally in Janesville, and I was the reporter from my paper that was supposed to cover the crowd outside, because at that point, some of his rallies had gotten kind of angry at that point. And there was a big fight that broke out, and a girl punched a man, and then somebody pepper sprayed her, and I was about 1 inch away from her, so a lot of that pepper spray got on me, but luckily it didn't get in my eyes, so I could continue working and interviewing people, and then I got locked out of getting back into the building where the rally was, so I had to find my own way home. It was a terrible experience, honestly.
Actually, ironically, that was the synopsis of last night's, or 2 nights ago when they had the reboot of Roseanne. The same exact thing happened. My God, you didn't get hurt. I mean, obviously pepper spray is not exactly a mint freshener. So, I mean, there was that, but no lingering long-term effects, were there?
No, I mean, it got on my skin, but it didn't get in my eyes. So, I just dealt with it.
As a guy that went through the U.S. Army, when you go through basic training, they do the tear gas thing for you. So I can sympathize.
Man.
Where they make you go in so that you know how to put on a gas mask, but before they leave, they want you to get a big old air full of that stuff, and so they rip off your gas mask. And so, yeah, I had drained sinuses that day. It was magical.
Okay. It wasn't that bad. Well, I don't believe.
On the pain scale, the only thing that's a little worse than that is you've been covering what seems to be the long, eternal Supreme Court election case in Wisconsin. I'm only slightly exaggerating that. There is an election there for the Supreme Court in your state. We don't have that. We have, people show up on ballots, but usually they're appointed initially in the state of Minnesota. First of all, what created this open seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court?
So Justice Michael Gableman was elected 10 years ago, and each term for Supreme Court justices are 10 years long. So his term is up this year, and he decided not to run again. So Milwaukee County Judge Rebecca Dallet, who is largely backed by liberals and Democrats, is running against Sauk County Judge Michael Skrenik, who is largely backed by conservatives. And they meet on Tuesday.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, which is a little odd here. So if this isn't necessarily a special election, is this how Wisconsin Supreme Court seats are decided, or why wouldn't they do it in the first Tuesday, not the first in November?
Right. So the Supreme Court elections are technically nonpartisan, though they are very partisan races, and so they have them on during an April spring election, the general election in April.
What is the current dynamic makeup of the Wisconsin Supreme Court? How many? I mean, as you say, it's non-political, but it's been political ever since Prosser decided to become Johnny Chokey, and that whole thing came to light. What is the current makeup, Republicans and Democrats, on the Wisconsin Supreme Court?
So the conservatives, the court is perceived to be controlled by conservatives, and the conservative justices control the court 5-2. So depending on who wins this race, it's not going to flip the court in any way. But if Judge Dallet, for example, if she wins, then, people would start describing the court as being 4-3.
Okay. And, in this day and age, though, that still doesn't matter because, I think we're not novices here. I mean, usually the political parties, especially as you said, they've taken advantage of what is supposedly a nonpartisan race. They put their people there. When it comes to these rulings, I'm presuming these Supreme Court justices get calls from the political higher powers and are told how to rule on these things. Am I really that out of line for believing that?
I mean, I can't speak to what their communication is with with lawmakers or politicians, but, you know, the reason that people, you know, it's a nonpartisan race, but the reason that people believe and should believe that they are political because, you know, outside groups get involved and they are allowed to spend money on behalf of each candidate. So ultimately and inevitably, the races come down to what people see as a conservative candidate and a liberal candidate. Some have tried running as a moderate, you know, an impartial judge. And I mean, I think 2 years ago in the last competitive race that we had for Supreme Court, there was a judge who did that, and he got 9% of the votes or something. So it's you know, a nonpartisan race, but it's a partisan race.
What is the number show right now? Is the person who is aligned with the left, is it looking like a lot of these races, not just in Wisconsin, that Senate District 9, but as well nationwide? Are they looking like they are taking the lead, or is this, bucking the trend where the Republican seems to be the front runner?
I mean, it's really hard to say. I know that there's been a lot of involvement from national figures in this race and on behalf of Rebecca Dallet. Eric Holder came to campaign for her. Joe Biden just endorsed her. So there's been a lot of national attention. There's been a couple articles that have said that this race is, you know, people are wondering if she wins this race, then they will, you know, believe that this so-called blue wave is coming for Wisconsin elections here. But it's hard to say who will win Tuesday because there's a lot of money being spent on both sides and on behalf of Judge Michael Skrenik too. So, and you know, conservatives always turn out pretty well for these spring races too.
Well, and that's the numbers for the Republicans. I mean, look at it, it was Pennsylvania 18. The Republicans showed up in the same numbers. It's all of a sudden the Democrats are showing up and the independents voting with the Democrats. That's what's scaring the living daylights out of the Republicans, that they already know their 30, 31, 33% of the populace will show up for them. They're banking on not 31, 33% of the rest of the populace showing up to vote for the Democrats. And that's been kind of the problem that they're having, is the turnouts are outrageously high for these elections. There has been, at least nationally, and I saw this a little bit here in Minnesota, a lot of reports of the Republicans, conservatives are very concerned about this race and concerned about this seat. And there has been an influx of national dollars coming in for the Republican, you know, not officially labeled, but the more conservative judge on this case. You know, that's been a sign that there has been concern, and generally it's not worked too well for the Republicans to throw a lot of money into these races. Is that true? Has there been a lot of money coming in that race? And is it because they're concerned this seat could end up going back to a more liberal judge?
I mean, I have seen, you know, the NRA endorsed Judge Skrenik, and they put some money into this race. Eric Holder's group aimed at flipping seats from Republican to Democratic also has spent money on behalf of Judge Dallet. And I know that the state Republican Party here has also spent a lot of money on this race on behalf of Michael Skrenik. So I think any Republican here would tell you that they believe that, you know, Democrats are energized and that they're expecting turnout to be to reflect that energy that they see, but it's we'll see if it matches what, you know, conservatives can usually pull out and turn out. I know that in the primary, the February primary, that there were two liberal candidates, and you know, putting their votes together, they had more votes than Judge Skrenik. But that also occurred the last competitive race, and the conservative judge won. Won that race anyway. So we'll see what happens.
And there's the other interesting element of this is that you have gerrymandered districts. You might have voter restrictions and stuff like that. The reality is it's a statewide race, and any gerrymandering in a district doesn't matter. It's the amount of people in the state. I imagine Scott Walker himself has been out, you know, campaigning for the conservative in this case, because, I mean, obviously he's enjoyed having a Supreme Court that's basically backed up every decision. And not only that, but has knocked down investigations into his administration as well.
Governor Walker, he appointed Judge Skrenik in 2015 to the Sauk County bench. And Sauk County is just a county away from Dane County west of here. And I did see a campaign mailer. I'm not sure who paid for it. It might have been Judge Skrenick's campaign, with a photo of Judge Skrenick and Governor Walker together. So I believe he's endorsed Judge Skrenick. He hasn't been, you know, really out there campaigning a lot or anything, but it, I know that he has said he supports Judge Skrenick, and obviously because he appointed him to the bench.
This obviously as well. Now, once again, this race, this is decided on Tuesday the 3rd, right?
Yes.
Right. And then you will get a nice long sleep. This has been a long race.
I hope so.
Well, at least for a few days, because it does sound like something you and I talked about the last time you were on the air. There are these open seats in the Wisconsin Assembly, the Wisconsin Senate, that Scott Walker was not going to call elections for. And judges, now I believe it's two judges, have ruled against him. And am I correct in
three.
that he has decided he's not going to take this to the – is it three judges?
It's three judges.
It's three judges. Is it true that he has decided he's not going to take this to the U.S. Supreme Court?
Yes, that's right. And it would be the state Supreme Court. But so they appealed – Governor Walker appealed a Dane County Circuit Court judge's order, or asked for them to delay the requirement to call these elections promptly. And then another Dane County judge denied that motion to do that. And so then Governor Walker appealed that decision to an appellate court in Waukesha County, which is, you know, a pretty conservative county. But that judge there also denied their motion. So he could have appealed to the Supreme Court, but he decided last night not to do that, and he this morning called for those elections. And so those elections will take place in June. And there was also a piece of legislation that Senate Republicans were pushing at the same time that basically would have gotten around any judge's order to call those elections. And eliminated a requirement state law for the governor to call special elections promptly when there's a vacancy. But they also abandoned that effort this morning, too.
Well, yeah, because eventually that seat's going to be held by a Democrat, and that's not something you want to put into place if you're the Republicans, and all of a sudden you find yourself in the minority on this. The thing which I find to be it's funny when you talk about this in the judicial branch. I don't care. We've seen this with a few of the recounts and stuff we've had in Minnesota. When it comes to voting, I don't care which party they are. They all basically want to kind of take a hands-off saying, no, the public has a right. No judge, it seems to me, regardless of party, wants to be the deciding factor in saying that, no, your district is not going to have representation. Even if it's a lame duck representative, their mentality is, it's not my job as the judicial branch to start dictating the constituent representation for said district. Henceforth, it does not surprise me that the judges, even in a conservative court, or maybe Walker got wind the Supreme Court was not going to rule with him either. It doesn't surprise me the judicial branch, regardless of political leanings, is all saying, no, you need to have these. This is how the government of this country works.
The judges, the rulings the decisions that the judges made, they were pretty simple. The arguments were pretty simple. They said, you know, the law says that you must have elections, you must have lawmakers that represent people, and state law says you have to promptly call these elections. So, I don't, you know, even in the appellate decision, I didn't read anything that had caveats or anything like that. It was basically, you know, you need to call these elections now.
Yeah. How many elections are we looking at?
Well, there will be a primary in the first Senate district, which is in Northeast Wisconsin, and because two Republicans are running. And I'm not sure about the 42nd Assembly District, which is around Dane County, but not all the way in Dane County. So there will be a primary election in May, and then there will be a general special election in June for both seats.
And so one Senate seat, one Assembly seat. Neither one of these is going to be the deciding factor of majority, though, in either the Senate or the Assembly, correct?
No.
But it's so the main point is this, is that it seems that Walker, just especially after the Senate 9 race, where was a massive Democratic upset, and now with the Supreme Court race possibly and frantically spending money trying to prevent that from going to a liberal seat, you know, what they really are trying to avoid is have, as you said, with June, you know, going into summer and having, you know, more Democratic defeats potentially. I mean, I'm presuming that Senate District 1 is a very conservative district, as of up northeastern Wisconsin, and henceforth, if that was to flip, the Dane County seat, you know, I'm going to presume is going to have a decent chance that the Democrats winning there. But if we have it like what's happened in other places and a fairly conservative seat goes to the Democrats, you know, it's really salt in the wounds, especially as you're trying to ramp up your election efforts for November.
I think, you know, Republicans know that this might be a tough election year for them. I don't believe the Assembly Speaker is worried about the Assembly seat as much as probably the Senate leader is worried about that seat. Because in the Assembly, there's 99 members and 64 of them are Republicans right now. So there's no time soon is that going to flip to a Democratic majority. But in the Senate, there's many fewer of them. So, you know, if the seat in northeastern Wisconsin, which includes Green Bay, so it's not 100%, you know, conservative, flips to a Democratic seat, that's one more seat that, you know, that gets them closer to having a flipped Senate.
Well, and by your own numbers there, it's the Assembly, though. I mean, I will say this. Now, it doesn't sound like this U.S. Supreme Court ruling on the Wisconsin district is going to come. The seats as they are going to be the ones that are in the election, correct? Coming in November, right?
Right. Yep. Right. That's right. Yep.
So there's not going to be a change there. But ask North Carolina, was it Virginia? Ask Virginia about, you know, whether, you know, there's a safe margin right now, because the system, and I know that you, as a journalist, you're hesitant to call it like this, but the system that the Republicans have put in place is gerrymandered seats, limits on the voting, and try to hold as many seats as possible. The problem is, we're seeing this in Minnesota, too, where the Minnesota House is probably in play at this point for the Democrats. You have these suburban seats, and with Wisconsin, so many suburban areas that are there, that, you know, really are 55-45 Republican or closer. And a lot of those seats are going to be in trouble. I think that it's as much as the Assembly would like to say this, I'm telling you what, if we do see this blue wave coming and it's similar to what happened in Virginia, I don't know if necessarily, you know, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and this is not contradicting you or challenging you, but I don't know if your Assembly Speaker should be necessarily feeling comfortable at this, because the last thing these guys, the system is based on, their voters show up, the other voters don't. And the system is not designed for the other voters showing up and showing up in record numbers.
Yeah, and I shouldn't imply that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is, you know, doesn't care what happens there or anything like that. I'm sure that, you know, he will, you know, make, you know, every effort that he can to keep that seat. But, you know, that the specter of, you know, it flipping to a Democratic majority is not as possible as it is in the Senate, which I think there might be more urgency to do.
You need to take that pepper spray with pride. I mean, you got pepper sprayed. That's a pretty damn cool thing, if you ask me. It wasn't cool then. But it's the fact that you can say, you know, when you have your kids, you have your grandkids, I was pepper sprayed once. That will be a good story around the old Easter table at that point.
Yeah, unfortunately, people remember that more than any story I've written so far.
Pass the salt and pepper. And speaking of pepper, Molly Beck, we will link to some stories of yours a little bit later on. We'll spotlight this interview. All my best on Tuesday. I might check back with you next week, okay?
Absolutely. That would be great.
Molly Beck is with the Wisconsin State Journal, covers politics down there, and she's kind enough to join us. Thanks, Molly.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Talk to you soon.